the cost of youth soccer, the industry has just gotten completely out of control.
Why are kids on certain teams and how have they found themselves there? And is it indeed the best situation for them to develop?
There really seems to be a lack of inclusion.
I'd love to see a club just be honest and say that.
Right. But you know all that BS? Forget that. We're not saying it because it doesn't matter. We're just going to play to win.
This call is now being recorded.
So I thought I'd start with the most pernicious accusation against you, which is that you are me. How do you respond
I'm glad I asked myself that. You know, I was just saying to myself as I was on Twitter with my two different phones, one against each ear, basically reliving Adam West on the phone in the Batman series of both Commissioner Gordon and Chief O'Hara. And I was thinking to myself, people are morons, me.
Right.
I hope this has got the interview off to a rolling start. Oh, my God.
Well, you realize this won't convince anyone. Someone will just say that, you know, I'm doing two voices, whichever one of us I am.
At this point, I'm not really sure. Because you could mix it. And as Tony Hendricks said, walk through the ocean of most souls won't get your feet wet. It's just you have to.
Yeah.
You just have to use audacity.
But I can mix things together. And, you know, it reminds me of, you know, I wrote a story about the flat earth movement that was directly influenced by soccer conspiracy theorists. And it also reminded me of, I think it was in high school, they showed us some film strip about the Salem witch trials. And apparently what the mob thought was that if someone could recite the Lord's Prayer, that they were not a witch. And so they were okay. This priest who's been accused and has basically the noose around his neck, he's, you know, 10 seconds from dying, starts reciting the Lord's Prayer. And there are people who say, oh, wait, no, he's doing it just fine. You know, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, and not tripping up at all. And they say, oh, well, you know, maybe we have the wrong person. And someone says, never is the devil, you know, more evil than when he's convincing us that he's not the devil. And so they hang him anyway. So it's one of those things where people can always just say you're lying somehow.
Yeah. All right, I am the Messiah. He is the Messiah.
Exactly. Yeah, that works as well. Okay, so if you're just joining us, I'm the person with no voice. Yeah. Oh, do you not want to introduce yourself?
No, why would I? Yes, allow me to introduce myself. Your boat.
Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Dan.
Right. So the reason for those of us, for anyone tuning into the rebirth of the Ranting Soccer Dad podcast, you know, might say this is kind of like a Spinal Tap Mark II when they're playing at the, what looks like an, you know, the music, well, it is an amusement park.
Yeah, so it was
Chad's
Odyssey for the puppet show.
right.
Welcome
on
to
the
base,
Darren Smalls, he wrote this, yeah. The reason that we're doing this is because we're going to have some fun with soccer conspiracy theories and maybe
one
talk
of the
about
ways,
how, yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, it's your show. I didn't mean to interrupt. One of the ways we could prove we're different people is we could just argue about, oh, it doesn't have to be about promotion or relegation. We can just pick some sort of random and just start yelling at each other like we're in It's Always Sunny or something.
Well, you know, people still would say, you know, just like I was running into this when I was doing research for my book, which I can't reveal details about yet, but it will annoy a lot of people. But – you know, Gary Cliben, I think I'm pronouncing that right.
I don't care.
Who, yeah.
And he's not here to defend himself, but, and I think this is important, I don't care.
Yeah.
What about him? Go ahead. You were telling a story.
Oh, and also I should digress here. U.S. soccer has never pronounced my name right. I mean, you know, I could be on the conference call with people who have known for 10 years, it's Durer. It's not that hard. In fact, actually, in French, it does mean hard. So that's kind of ironic that it's not that hard. I was talking about Gary Kleiban and how he hates Alexi Lalas. And when, you know, he says that Alexi is too soft on U.S. soccer and Alexi's just a shill for U.S. soccer and so forth. And then when Alexi did his now famous tattooed millionaires.
Yes.
Yeah, which was wonderful.
That is aged beautifully, by the way. That was prescient. That was impressive. More uncomfortably close to home than we realized at the time. I thought, you hot taking son of a gun. The talk about the wrong time to have your horse come in, I guess, but oh boy. Yeah.
And I think I had Alexi on the podcast soon after he said that because we talked about the derivation of tattooed millionaires, which is, of course, from Bruce Dickinson. And Bruce Dickinson, in this case, being the real-life Iron Maiden singer, not the fictional producer played by Christopher Walken in the More Cowbell sketch. Anyway, Cliven's response to that, to Alexi's rant, was basically the same as the people in the Salem witch trials, which was that, there's nothing worse than this. Here's Alexi pretending to be criticized by U.S. soccer so he can appear that way. And so what exactly is Alexi supposed to do in that case? And look, I don't mean to apologize for everything Lawless says, what exactly is he supposed to do in terms of being called a shill or not being called a shill?
Maybe top, like, three people in American soccer who would care less about what you call them than Alexi Lalas? I mean, we all are basically there for him to dunk on us on Twitter if the mood strikes him. I mean, we're just his batting practice pitchers, basically.
Oh, yeah.
He would enjoy being called a shill. More than he's literally one of those people where you try and call it, he wins. I mean, he can make reasoned and insightful and thought out points. He just doesn't need to because we all just serve him up these beach balls over the plate all the time.
Yeah.
So what's the point of being mad at Alexi? Like,
right. He has the personality to do what he does.
But I know what he does for a living. I mean, I'm sure he would admit it. Maybe I'm not the person to like sort of step back and give my take on people's personas, but people do have personas. But I think he, to a large extent, is living his gimmick. I can't imagine he cares about being called a shill. I just can't fathom that would be something he would give a moment's thought to.
Well, the thing I've always found impressive about Alexi, at least since he went to Fox and kind of developed this persona, and you know, I have to say, having known Alexi as long as I have, at times I don't recognize his TV persona. It does, you know, that doesn't seem like the same person that I chat with. But what I envy about him most, and I've told him this many times, is the sort of zen attitude that he has toward people who just launch into him. I don't know if you've ever seen one of his Periscope sessions. He doesn't do it as often as he used to. He used to do it every day. But, you know, somebody would come in and yell at him and say, I'm not going to be here anymore. You know, I just came in to yell at you. And, Alexi would say, you know, And Alexi would say, go in peace.
Yeah.
So it got to where every time I came into the Periscope session, I would announce myself by saying, namaste. And so you say, oh, hey, Bo, namaste. So, yeah.
Oh,
and,
my goodness.
And, you know, it's amazing the persistence of some of these things. And, yeah, I have these nightmares that I'm going to be subpoenaed in a trial of some sort. And they're going to say, isn't it true that MLS once paid you? You know, or did MLS ever pay you? And I would have to say, I don't know, because I wrote fantasy
on
MLS net. What's that?
Did the checks bounce?
Did the checks bounce? No, see, I wrote for MLS net at the same time that Eric Winalda did. You know, I was writing fantasy columns. He was writing opinion pieces. I was just writing about, you know, whether or not you should start Mamadou Diallo this week. And I don't remember what the relationship was at the time. I think Major League Baseball's wing, you know, Major League Baseball Advanced Media, I think they were involved with running the site at that point. So I don't
remember. My gosh, that's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's
a blast from the past. My goodness.
Yeah. And
like,
you never
I can
know who's
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, with the media, you
yes,
never
we're the
quite
same
know.
Person, so we're interrupting each other. We're stepping on
each
other.
Yeah, shut up, me. You never know how far removed the news organization is from the parent. I mean, you know, when I wrote for ESPN, I would get checks from Disney, which,
oh, right.
You know, and my family all loves Disney World, and so they were really impressed with that. They were less impressed when Fox News Latino got in touch with me. They needed something. I think they wanted to know about Spanish-speaking players at the Women's World Cup, and specifically players from the Americas that were not the U.S. and Canada. And so I thought, great, I'll write that. And then a few weeks later, the check shows up from Fox News Channel.
It didn't say
Fox News Latino. It said Fox News Channel, and I had to jump into the shower right away. I mean, it was just, yeah. And, you know, like I'd written for Fox Soccer, but Fox Soccer, yeah, that's not the same organization. You know, it's the same as, you know, that company as an umbrella.
But Bo, there is no ethical consumption under capitalism. This is what Marx has taught us. In order for us to overthrow this, just basic, orthodox, communist theory, Bo. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. If we're going to overthrow the system, we have to put the means of production in the hands of lower division American soccer teams. That's how it's going to start. And
right.
Then,
and so, Ricardo Silva is a proletariat, is what you're telling me, right? Ricardo Silva is the voice of the.
We were ahead of the curve, and now everybody hates billionaires, but soccer fans are way ahead of that. This is all just on the gravy boat for us. None of us are surprised. But, well, billionaires are terrible. Who knew?
It's just a question of which billionaire you choose to follow. I mean, there's some people who would choose Arthur Blank, and there's some people who would choose Rocco Camiso. And, you know, it's just like there's some people who, you know, I hate New York billionaires, and they vote for Donald Trump, who might not be a billionaire. We don't know because we can't see his tax returns or anything else.
I am perfectly happy to make this an hour. Just ranting about.
No, we're not going to get. I don't want to get on a political. We've already agreed that we're not going to talk about Roger Stone, or Ralph Northam, or Jeff Bezos, or whatever the topic is tomorrow when I put this out. Who knows what we'll be talking about tomorrow?
Yes, yesterday's news tomorrow.
Right. So. But, yeah, in terms of the proletariat being, you know, the people who want to, you know, turn the NPSL or the UPSL or the U.S. Premiership, into, who think that those organizations should be able to compete with MLS, whatever that means, it's one of those things where, again, you can't really win because, there are people who, it kind of pained me being a guy from Athens, Georgia, whose dad lived part of his childhood on a farm and whose granddad ran that farm, to hear that I don't care about rural America because I don't think we're ready for promotion relegation, and because I don't think a youth team from rural West Virginia is going to be best served by having a professional team atop that youth structure that can climb its way up the ladder. I mean, I think that there are other mechanisms that U.S. soccer should be trying to reach the rural community in West Virginia and see if there's, and that's something they can do right now. They should, I'm disappointed in U.S. soccer's training center program, which is where they should be going out to communities. And also we've devalued ODP. So there are things that U.S. soccer can do right now, but no, that's not good enough. What we need to do is start promotion relegation so that somebody comes in and spends a ton of money on this club in West Virginia, and then all of a sudden all their kids get signed by Borussia Dortmund.
And see, this is probably where I can prove that we're different people, because
right.
I do not think youth soccer or amateur soccer or anything like that should have any say or any business driving the professional game, driving the national team, driving the World Cup tournament. I think those need to follow in the wake. Major League Baseball does not take its cues from Little League coaches any more than Vince McMahon takes his cues from NCAA wrestling. If you want to grow the sport, you grow fans. Fans are what is going to put the sport on the next level, because fans bring money. What we need to have the outreach is where there are fans. And rural Montana is not it. And as far as play, this is another one of my pet peeves, and this is where you and I, I'm sure, differ. Players self-select. You can have all sorts of structures either drawn up or implemented. It is up to the player to decide how far he or she is willing to commit the talent that was given to him or her. And all the coach can do is teach the – I realize how reductive that is, but it's simply borne out. You have professionals come once in three generations in some of these places, let alone the kind of stars that we think will be churned out if we – restructure the bureaucracy. That's simply not how it works. You increase the talent pool with more money. You create the jobs. This is a way for people to make a living doing it. That's why we have better players now than we did, than the American players in the 60s or 70s, because there are more jobs for them. You can make a living doing it. You can support other players getting better. You have this infrastructure being built. To me, that is so basic. And if it were going to be done through a series of amateur or youth schools designed to preserve NCAA eligibility, then we would have had this in the 80s. We would have already been this world power. This is the problem with trying to create a nationwide structure and your only focus is on the extreme, extreme, extreme right end of the bell curve, that where it's just effectively random. What you want to do is create a wider base in order to give more opportunities for the player to decide that this is a realistic and enjoyable and potential career, rather than just think that someone is going to see the San Jose Earthquakes get relegated and decide that that's going to inspire them to be a better player. It's madness to me. So I think that the youth side is extremely overrepresented in the current U.S. soccer structure. And I think one day that's going to be a real issue. That was what I was worried about in the election. You had amateur, you had state, you had amateurs telling professionals their jobs, and that's a way to make the professionals irritated. And someday that rock is gonna fall.
And you're right, I do disagree with you.
Yes.
But perhaps not in the way you'd expect, and it's this. I disagree that youth soccer is overrepresented. They're, 25-ish%. I mean, it's complicated. It depends on how many life members show up and things like that. And the athlete representation is dictated by federal law. It has to be 20%. And actually, I think there are similar structures in some other countries as well. Anyway, we can't really begrudge athletes getting 20%. I think there actually is a valid point that maybe Carlos Bocanegra, while he is working for MLS or for an MLS team, maybe shouldn't be one of the leaders of the athlete council, but that's another. Anyway, the point I'm trying to get to is
that's not the topic, but why not? I mean, you have players collectively bargaining, not just in MLS, but in other sports. I mean, they are involved. They have a stake. It is their careers. They're across the table from the people who work for and own the teams. That's the way it works in the professional world. I don't understand why you would think that an athlete in the sport that is putting a roof over their heads and putting their kids through school shouldn't have a say in the direction of the sport.
Well, and the argument here is that Carlos Bocanegra is Brad Guzan's boss, and they are both on the athletes council. And yeah, it doesn't look good. I mean, at the very least, the optics are bad. At the very worst.
Brad Guzan is not Brad Guzan. Too much Chivas USA in my misspent youth. He's not making copies for Bocanegra. He's saving shots. Isn't like his political views decide. If Brad was a vampire, he'd still have the Atlanta job, provided they play enough night games. I mean, that's any sort of general manager who's going to demand a they're not going to win many games. It's frustrating to me that people see these kind of conspiracies and assume not just the worst motives, but self-destructive motives. It's a bad idea for Carlos Bocanegra to demand that his players join the Athletes Council and fight promotion and relegation to protect his boss's monopoly. That's not his job.
That's where it gets pretty ridiculous.
Let alone Brad's job.
Yeah. Bear in mind. You have to bear in mind, I'm married to an ethics lawyer. So
what are ethics? No, I'm kidding.
Major, and I wasn't very good at it. I double majored philosophy and music. I was okay in music and not that good in philosophy. But anyway, to get back to the council structure of U.S. soccer, I think youth soccer should have 25% to say, because that's where we get future players. The adult council is not where we get future players.
Almost by definition.
Right. The adult council is where players go when they want to stay in the game, and bless them for doing so.
Yeah.
It's, and I wouldn't say 0%, but I don't understand how adults get as much vote as youth. And we're talking about adults being, again, you know, amateurs who are going to stay. In fact, that raises an interesting question. If we have promotion relegation, do we have to do away with the adult council because then all of a sudden they're pro? I've just blown my own mind. Or your own mind. Of course, we're the same person, so I guess I guess we're having a collective mind-blowing experience here.
Well, speak for myself.
Right.
No, that, and I would put it at an even farther remove. What, apart from making sure that MLS follows international contracts, what business does the U.S. Soccer Federation have one way or the other in telling MLS how to run its business? People seem to want the Federation to have this amazing amount of power that they don't have, they can't have, and they shouldn't have. And all you have to do is think of it the other way. What if FIFA wakes up tomorrow and says, you know what, Mr. Commissioner Garber's right. Closed leagues, or better still, Dan Loney is right. Promotion and relegation is garbage. It hinders competition. It doesn't make better players. It's a scam. We are now outlawing it. The same people who wanted promotion relegation imposed by FIFA would have to, well, I mean, they probably wouldn't miss a beat, but the issues of who has power over whom have not been raised adequately to satisfy me, but it's frightening. And you saw this in the election. People would come up with all these plans, and they were going to use ways like they were Stallone playing Judge Dredd, and it's as if people don't have their own kind of volitional self-interest. People didn't put 20 years in building a professional game pretty much from zero. I hate to be that guy, but you saw it in the 90s, just like I did.
In 1992, the Colorado Foxes would be the world's dominant power if only we had relegated the Los Angeles Salsa.
I will top you on that. Yeah. The Colorado Foxes, Foxes would probably beat most MLS teams. Like, if you put them in a game. Now, over a season, because they didn't have any depth, and they didn't have any facilities, and they didn't have any training, they didn't have any fans, they get crushed. They get worn down. But the quality, because there were only like 3 or 4 or 5 decent teams in the country, so you had this collection of very good players. Marcelo Balboa was Robin Fraser. I mean, that would be close to an all-star team today. But then but then the rest of the team were made up of people who could either afford or were dedicated enough to play for the kind of salaries that the Colorado Foxes would pay you for being not their star. Not everyone can do that.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't sustainable.
Right, and a lot of the players of that day, you know, played for the Colorado Foxes in the summer and the Buffalo Blizzard in the winter, you know, because that's how they could make ends meet. And, you know,
or heaven knows what, and which is all wonderful about spreading the gospel of soccer, but that's not how you train a professional. It can't be.
Yeah, I mean, it's really impressive that people managed to do that. And that might be something, you know, for the Society of American Soccer History, of which I'm a member and of which I was one of 5 people at the meeting at the coaches convention just wrapped up in Chicago. Interesting to study. It was good. It was good. But I did a presentation on the history of coaching education coaching education in the U.S., which was fun. I put the timeline up on my site. And, the timeline, if you go to rantingsoccerdad.com, and now that I have relaunched the podcast, there's more reason.
Well, how's it going?
I should, I think it's clear so far.
Who are you planning to have? You could probably get some really terrific guests. I mean, you probably wouldn't be scraping the bottom of the barrel like in the next 10, 15 years. You could probably get some of the most insightful, well-spoken.
I think I'd probably just recycle the same people, honestly, at this point. Let's see, podcast guests, who have I had?
This is my first time, unless I'm badly mistaken. This is my first time on, isn't it? I can't imagine anyone listening cares now that I actually hear myself talk. I wonder how often Dan's been on.
Yeah, I mean, at some point I'll have to have Alexi back on. At some point I would love to have Eric Winalda back on, but, you know,
he's the other guy. It's like, what does he care what people? And maybe he does.
Right.
He shouldn't. But really, what does he have to prove to anyone?
Yeah,
because I think he's laughably wrong about promotion relegation, but that doesn't matter to him. What am I going to tell him?
I think he really wants to prove himself as a coach. Yeah, he really wants to prove himself as a coach.
Good luck to him.
Yeah,
well,
and he seems to do well when he's coaching. And I don't know if it's because he sort of a big fish, little pond sort of thing, but, you know, he'll take over Cal FC and they'll win some games in the Open Cup. When he was coaching in Atlanta, even sort of by remote control from the West Coast, he seemed to do pretty well. And, you know, Las Vegas just, you know, beat the crap out of a couple of teams in preseason. So I think he might actually do pretty well. Given a shot at it. I miss his radio show. His radio show was pretty good.
That's right.
I was going to go back to Ranting Soccer Dad and point out that if you go to rantingsoccerdad.com and look at 2019 convention, there are two links there underneath that. If you hover over the menu, one is called Not a Good Site, and that is the parody youth soccer site that I did for my presentation on what you should and should not have on your website, which actually drew about 50 people. It was a pretty good presentation. So it is. It was so much fun to do that because I was using Wix, which I never used before, and when I messed up, I just left it because that was sort of the point. But the other one is Coaching Ed. Right. So the other one is Coaching Ed. And so it's coaching education through the years. I start out with a picture of Coach McGurk from Home Movies. John Benjamin before he was every other voice on TV, from Bob's Burgers to Archer to the video store clerk.
The video store.
Doesn't run in Family Guy. Something in Family Guy.
I don't want to say comic book store. I want to say video store, but I've not seen a lot of. But yes, we that was
right.
Arguably his certainly the role that launched him. He's about to go into Dr. Katz professional. I come onto this thing and I'm ready.
Oh, that's right. That was
like,
him too.
Yes, he was, and it's a very different voice. And so I'm coming here. I think I'm going to scream at you about promotion and relegation, about how everything you think you know about promotion and relegation is an embarrassing misnomer and nobody on the internet should be allowed to express an opinion. And we're talking about Dr. Katz, professional therapist, and wow, that was a really good show. I mean, especially once they got rid of Squiggle Vision. It just was watchable, and Brendan Small is just such a great character. Oh, my gosh. Adult Swim of the 90s or 2000.
And there's a reference to it in my upcoming book.
Coach McGurk?
No, it's a reference to Dr. Katz. Dave Chappelle, before he was Dave Chappelle, before of Chappelle's show, was
I think
on.
I think he was always Dave Chappelle. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's on. Right. No, he's actually you. You and Dave Chappelle are the same person.
I'll bet you $50 million I'm not Dave Chappelle.
Well, has anyone ever seen the two of you in the same room? See, for you and I, we can, you know, there are people who've seen us in the same room one time in Los Angeles when I was out there for MLS Cup, and they had this blogger thing, and there was somebody there from Bleacher Report. Bill Archer was there, and if Bill Archer would stop, you know, ranting about how liberals were ruling the world for about 5 minutes, maybe he would, you know, remember, oh, yeah, Dan and, you know, they were both there. So,
someday the great blogger guy, I'll give you, that went so well for me, I was not invited to the next one. And I think there was one in 2009 in Seattle.
Was there?
I was pointedly not, maybe I'm just making it up out of my paranoid rantings, but, someday, well, we all had to sign non-disclosure agreements.
I don't remember that.
I absolutely.
Oh my gosh! How did I forget that?
Because it was all supposed to be about. This is so much more interesting to me now than promotion and relegation. This is all I want to talk about. Because it was about the media direction of Major League Soccer at that point, and I think it was pre a lot of things. But Bleacher Report was there, and I wrote them off as wanting to be Deadspins when they grew up. I mean, and this will surprise nobody listening to this at this point, but all I did was just yammer and, like, interrupt and mock. And the twist is I had my two-month-old daughter
that I remember
in a baby Bjorn, and my wife was sitting there with a uncomfortable, horrified look because I thought this was a blogger conference and not a meeting of professional reporters charting out the MLS media strategy. So I thought it'd be a bunch of bloggers. And at the time, I was one of the more prominent ones. So I thought I was going in to meet people who liked me and would be interested in seeing my wife and child. And they weren't. They really weren't.
I don't know how many other reporters were there now that I think about it, because
God,
you say, reporters charting out the MLS media strategy,
Steven
that actually
Goff
does sound
was
like
there.
Conspiracy.
Jack Bell was there. You don't remember that these were, and the only one everyone heard talk, Bruce, Bruce was there, Jack Bell, Steven Goff, Luis Bueno, and I was just talking over them because, you know, was in my house. I mean, it's my stadium.
Right. Yeah.
I should explain. It was 2008 before MLS Cup, the Galaxy were hosting, so it was a local drive for us. So that's why I thought I was going to be basically the guest of honor at this thing, and I wasn't. Oh, my God, was I not.
It was obviously Bruce. Which reminds me, I need to go to Minneapolis one of these days and just watch a game with Bruce.
This is so much better than talking about promotion relegation. He went to see Minnesota play Columbus. And we thought that would be their last regular season game. And it turned out to be the first game after they were saved. So we're all present in this history. And I'm sitting with them, and I'm thinking, I can't show how cold it is because they're all from Minnesota and they'd laugh at me. And meanwhile, they're all like shivering. It was just an amazing experience. And Bruce ends up like at all the great historical. Yeah, there's a guy who needs to write a book. There's a guy you need to have on your show. There's a guy who can.
You're right.
He's much better than me. What are you wasting time with me for? Let's get Bruce on. Oh my God. Have you got his number? Maybe I have his number. Yeah, Bruce is a guy you want to talk to. But he's so great.
I can find Bruce. And for people who don't know, Bruce is Bruce McGuire, who site called Due Nord, which summarized everything that was going on in soccer at the time. And it was basically you could just read it and he'd have, you know, if there was whatever interesting story had run out there, he would have a link to it. Whatever competition was played, he would have. It's what I tried to do on USA Today, and I didn't have time.
Please let me tell this part because this is like one of my enduring memories. And I'm sure I embarrassed Bruce by saying this, but Steven Goff was talking about, I remember very well what he was talking about. I've done that. He's not here to defend himself. And I said to Stephen Goff, you get more hits from Bruce's webpage than you do from the Washington Post homepage. I'm so glad.
Oh, boy.
To this day, I'm so glad I said it. I'm saying this as someone he's probably going to be in Frisco as a media hall of famer, but I'm so glad I said that to him. Anyway, but that's how important Bruce was. I mean, Bruce should be in Frisco someday, if you ask me.
It's going to be funny when we start having votes down the line for that. I've always been a little bit confused. I have nominated people for that award before, and they generally haven't won, which is not to say that the people who have won aren't. I think the people who have won are all great. It's going to be interesting, though, when my peers start going in, and I sit there, you know, having long retired from all this, waving a fist at them, you know, I like to think that I like most people, but, you know, anyway, I do have to tell you the Seattle story about
like?
what I remember of the 2009 MLS Cup, is that it was the typical USA Today, keep your expenses to a bare minimum trip. So, you know, I stayed, you know, and MLS, you know, look, they don't pay expenses. That's not how this works, for those of you who think that's how it works. It's not. But they, you know, will reserve lots, and so you buy. What I'm trying to say is basically they had somehow sort of worked out room assignments for the media, and I had this ridiculously nice hotel room in Seattle where I stayed for about 6 hours. Five of which were asleep. So basically I looked at, wow, what a really nice view. Sleep. Wake up. Wow, what a really nice view. I need to go. And that night, I had to catch the red eye back to the East Coast the night of the game. Now, for those who don't remember, that game went to extra time. That game went to penalty kicks. That game even went beyond the standard five penalty kicks and kept going until Edson Buttle missed and Robbie Russell from Duke, I should point out, made his shot. And so then I go down and talk to the other Dukies, Jason Price and Garth Lagerwey, and I just remember racing down thinking, I have to get some quote from somebody, and there's Garth. Yeah, someone I've known for a long, long time, because he used to live here. I'm not going to tell that story about him. And so I run up and basically, Garth, just tell me anything. And I get a quote from him, and I race back up to the media room, type in that quote, and then boom, I am out the door to catch the train to get to the airport so that I'm not stranded in Seattle. Not that being stranded in Seattle would be the worst thing. Hey, when another trip for USA Today, I was stranded in Qinhuangdao. In fact, that was the year before.
my Seattle story is so much more pathetic than that. I was there with my wife and daughter. That was her second consecutive MLS Cup, as it turned out. And so we go back to our hotel room, and I'm in a terrible mood, and my cell phone rings, and now that I'm telling this story, I think it was a prank, but it was an international call. Someone from the BBC wanted me to go on and say how much David Beckham meant to the Los Angeles Galaxy.
Oh, boy.
I think you have the wrong number.
Well, you know, Beckham, I have gone to the Wikipedia page for that game, and I'm presuming it's correct because I need to jog my memory a little bit. Can you remember who made it's a gimme, the first penalty kick in that shootout for the Galaxy was David Beckham. Do you remember who made the second penalty kick for the Galaxy in the kicks from the mark, to use the proper term?
The answer
who
is obviously
made,
no. It's I am not entirely sure that another Galaxy player made his penalty kick.
Well, because after that, Kurofsky and Donovan both missed.
Yes.
Then Mike McGee made it to keep it alive. And
Mike McGee, and for all I know, that's right. I mean, I don't care. I did not carry a lot of. I'm sure if we had won, would know.
No,
I remember Beckham making his kick and thinking this is one of the top 15 most ironic moments of my life. And anyone watching this in England is probably throwing their bottle at the screen at this clinical penalty being made. Years too late for any England fan.
Well, he wasn't. He wasn't going up against Germany, where you know, it seems like isn't that what happens to England every competition? They lose on penalty kicks to Germany. Yeah,
yeah.
But he was going up the correct answer.
Yes,
that's true.
Who was
the man who can say the second penalty kick taken successfully for the Galaxy? Greg Berhalter.
Oh, we were not prepared for penalty kicks that game, looking back.
Well, then Donovan missed his, and so...
And that was eye-opening. Again, this is so much better than talking about promotion relegation. That is an insight about penalty kicks, because you can't practice. I know people have written books saying, well, actually, you can't. But after 2 hours of running... especially the way Landon ran at his prime, asking to sit there and do a penalty kick, it was not surprising that he would miss because he had given it all on the field. Now, I'm not saying David Beckham didn't. You remember
or Greg Berhalter
Sunday? Yeah. Well, but yeah. Okay, but Greg, he didn't run as far.
Probably
he
not.
Was
no.
meant
it
to
wasn't
stay
his role.
I wouldn't tell him he was lazier than Landon Donovan because he hit me in the face and he needs that. But it was, it reminded me of Butch Cassidy's son asking, Robert Redford asked Strother Martin, can I move? And Strother Martin, what do you mean move? And he like blows the heck out of it. I'm better when I move. And that was, because Landon got to be a little notorious for missing. After game, like, I think he blew one in the Superliga a couple years later, and he just stopped taking penalties, and I felt like saying, it's a different situation. But, yeah, he doesn't come to me for advice.
Well, the Wikipedia entry for this game says, the shootout, successful penalties, Saunders saved the kick by Salt Lake captain Kyle Beckerman, and then, Landon Donovan missed his penalty, putting it over the goal despite his proficiency in penalties.
Yeah. Oh, it was.
So, yeah.
No, I am maybe getting my chronology wrong because I think the Superliga miss was before this because I said to my wife, because she said correctly that Landon's very, very good at penalties. And I said, well, the last one he missed was in a shootout like this one. And. Like, I might as well script it because it's exactly what happened. I think he even missed it the same way. It was over the bar.
Yeah. Oh, well, just typed in Superliga.
Lasted things, and we spent half an hour talking about this miserable, rainy, artificial turf. They didn't even have Javier Morales because he got off injured. And I thought we were going to win 5-0. And Omar Gonzalez breaks Ricketts' hand.
I would tell you Superliga history to see if we can back up the chronology there, but I entered Superliga into Wikipedia and it said Superliga can refer to different sports leagues, the Albanian Superliga, I'm tempted to read about the Superliga. For a minute.
I thought you'd never ask. Oh my gosh, I've never been so happy to see a rabbit hole.
Because, they have promotion relegation.
And that's why there's a power there. True story. True bad, boring story, but true story. Just this past week at the thrift shop, I saw an Albania soccer scarf. I could probably get it for you or anyone listening.
Oh, man.
I'm still there. I don't know who's. I don't know who wants to buy it. Well, although probably somebody snapped it up. You know, I shouldn't make promises. You don't see an Albania soccer jersey every day. This is the, that is the same thrift shop where those of you who follow me on Twitter, which is at DureSport, go see my avatar. The U.S. soccer player Nutcracker, that was the same thrift shop I got there. This is the weirdest thrift shop in the history of the world. I think it is a portal to some other dimension. And so right now, if you run to Peppermint Pig and Anderson Township in Cincinnati, they'll be closed. But if you go tomorrow morning, you can grab your Albania soccer jersey. Oh, my God, if it was a jersey. No, it's just a scarf. I didn't mean to get anyone's hopes up. You can edit this out, right? Although, if you were this would be like, no, you wouldn't be listening to this. I mean, no way I'm on your show if you could edit, right?
I was listening to this. I was listening to the new podcast that Amy Mann and Ted Leo are doing about creativity and so forth.
And too many
Amy Mann was complaining. Amy Mann was saying, well, Ted, because you edit the audio for this, you're probably going to take out the bit where our guest gushes about my music, aren't you? which I thought was terrific. But no, I don't plan to edit this. We'll just wrap up in 5 or 10 minutes or so. So it's an even hour or so, and then go for this.
I've clearly got nothing but time. Don't feel like you have to stop on my account. I am obviously willing to yammer about anything. And as far as your listeners are concerned, could not care less. If it is their fault, they're doing this to themselves willingly.
But do you ever make it to the end of the podcast? Because I usually don't. You know, I will be in the car.
Why I listen to Comparatively Few. I mean, part of it is I don't listen to as many as I should because I listen to the end. I listen to the Riot Squad podcast to the end. I listen to my friend Jennifer as a movie pilot. Listened to the end. Rebecca Cohen is famous by now, but yeah, I listen to The Sauce to the end. I mean, I don't, and that's what's frustrating because I can't skim a podcast the way I can skim something being read. I can go to my columns and like skip over all the boring, stupid parts and get to the one or two jokes that I put in. That's a much better art form. But if this is why I don't have a podcast, can you imagine listening to me for a full hour? Oh my God, you would kill yourself. Wouldn't you?
Well, haven't we been doing that now, or we've been listening to me
you've been listening to me talk to myself. I had forgotten the gimmick for a second.
That's true. That's true. So this actually is an hour of you talking
I was going to say it was like Jim Henson and Frank Oz, but then it'd be like four people. So it's really just Jim Henson.
Well, because Jim Henson and Frank Oz came together to do The Swedish Chef. And Frank Oz said he loved doing The Swedish Chef because that was the one time he and Jim worked directly together. Because I forget, you know, one of them was the head, one of them was the arms. Yeah, it was fascinating because, yeah, there's some Muppets that require more than one person to manipulate. And The Swedish Chef was one of them because he's always, you know, talking, but at the same time, his hands are going, put the cheeky in the besky, you know, that sort
this
of stuff.
Is why you have to listen to a whole podcast. I mean, this has to be, I had no idea, and I'm like such a fan of the Muppets. I had no idea the Swedish Chef was both of them or was appreciably more complicated than, say, Kermit and Grover or Piggy. That's amazing. This is why you listen, because you could skim and it would be like put in the header or something, and it'd be the teaser. But in the podcast, you got to listen. You got to put up with this, like me.
I will.
To hear, like, and you just made it all worthwhile. I mean, I guess it's your show. So you.
Well, I'll put it
probably
in the show.
Having this. Well, yeah. Oh, my goodness, yes. I mean,
yeah, I'll put
it
in the show notes. They listen to the end, so we talk about Swedish Chef, and because I have not yet told the Dave Chappelle story, from
I was about
20
to,
yeah,
ago I actually yeah. remembered. Yeah, we were about to go back to Dr. Katz.
Right, because there was a reference he made, Dr. Katz, that is in my upcoming book, because the book talks that, among other topics, about how the U.S. is so fractured, about how how difficult it is to get all of the various parties together. And Dave Chappelle illustrates, and the best part is that the illustration of this in Dr. Katz, the person one of the people he mentioned is wearing a football badge or a soccer badge, clearly meant to be a soccer fan. And so the joke is that I was going through one neighborhood and saw two Italian guys beating up an Irish guy. And I thought, man, those people are specific. that's us, because, soccer, and I'm giving away some of my book here. You will remember this, having been around online soccer discussion since. Were you on the North American soccer list way back when, before big soccer?
I was not. No, that's the one bit of. No, I do not have true original gangster cred. I have Soccer American graffiti cred, for what that's worth.
Right.
But no, I know the NA soccer list came first and laid the groundwork. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that. No, I was not on that. And it's a shame. I wish I was.
Right. And so, but you have enough institutional memory to remember that being a soccer fan in the United States used to have a sort of indie cred to it. It was like being an REM fan in 1981. It's like there's this thing that is superior to what you're listening to what you're watching. And, it is. An REM
fan. I would. I think it was a lot more like being an Insane Clown Posse fan. And we had this, here was my, and this wasn't just, this was a big part of the 90s. There was a soccer ball in a commercial. I think we're making it. People would keep trying. And now I realize that sounds like from another world, but that's how far we've come within living memory. I mean, it's not that long ago where people would just be amazed that there are kids playing with a soccer ball in this commercial. And people would track that and talk about it and discuss what it meant and how big the product was.
And so now to get that hipster cred, you have to be part of a subculture within soccer. And, the best way to do that is to say that, well, I'm smarter than U.S. soccer no matter what they do. If they institute promotion relegation tomorrow, I'll find some other reason why I'm superior to U.S. soccer. Or, if Alexi Lalas criticizes U.S. We're going back to the beginning here.
As if all this has happened before. And I was just about to disagree violently and go off into some tangent for no reason, which is actually very on brand for me. what you get are the ones, and Cincinnati will be the latest in a long line of new soccer fans who are convinced they invented the game. And that's the kind of, like, hipster cred, old-time cred, deservedly means nothing. It shouldn't mean anything because Cincinnati fans, like Seattle fans before them, like Toronto fans before them, or Philadelphia fans, every new market, every new group, every World Cup, there's a new series of fans, and they know it all, and they're saving the sport from the people before them that screwed it up. So you and I are old enough now to have killed the sport six times over, and each time it was saved first by the Chicago Fire and then by Chivas. Chivas USA was supposed to save the league.
I have never been more wrong about something than I was about Chivas USA. I thought they would draw big crowds. I really did.
Unaccustomed as I am to, talking about how smart I am, I called that puppy dead on.
You did.
Before they had a stadium. It may be the only thing I was ever right about. No, it was, I called that like Alexander Graham NFL. I've never been more right. I'll never be more right about anything, except promotion and relegation. I'm right about that. It's garbage. But the other thing I was right about was Chivas USA. I read that like a C-spot run book. Oh, let's talk about how smart I was. Those are the days. If you tell kids today about Chivas USA, they wouldn't believe
it. Yeah, it's to some extent, it's hipster cred. It's almost like craft beer. You know,
I'm convinced it's. And it was also the internet bringing this disparate group of ne'er-do-wells and social outcasts and providing a base, basically, where everyone could spend their money at once and gradually grow the sport until Uncle Phil had to say, I guess I won't close it down after all. But if it wasn't for us,
You're saying basically
Phil Anschutz
kept U.S. soccer alive.
Yes.
Yes. We the people who were online arguing, and we were arguing promotion relegation even then, although I think it was a lesser topic than the shootout, the MLS
yes,
style.
There was a lot
NASL,
more.
Right.
Well, the NASL, the original one in the 70s, it would have made it if there was an internet. That's the one takeaway of the past 20 years. Soccer has been the biggest beneficiary, along with juggalos and white supremacists and anime fans.
And porn.
Benefiting from the fractured media landscape because there was this niche. It can be nationwide without having to be in the top three.
Yeah.
And that turned out to be all soccer really needed. I don't think it ever has to be in the top three or even the top four. And if you count sports like golf and tennis and whatever, it may not even make top five, six, seven, whatever. But it's enough now to gather the money together to put on a league that can sustain itself. And
there is a site called mostpopularsports.net, and unfortunately the U.S. page of that is down, but it has, I think when I looked at it earlier, I believe soccer was fourth in the U.S. And they are, they have, the data they have in each country is fascinating. I mean, they use Alexa traffic and things like that. Apparently in Panama, the most popular sport is water sports, then boxing, then skateboarding, then, wow, I didn't realize this. Soccer isn't in the top five in Panama. And they kept us out of the World Cup.
Cup.
Well, yeah, there's that. In the Philippines, it's basketball, boxing, volleyball.
It's basketball.
Soccer.
Yes. It's basketball, but I don't know why that's fascinating to me. But is Thomas Dewey still coaching the Philippines national soccer team? Because he's made them within screaming distance of respectability, and I thought he'd get more attention for the U.S. job, but I guess there's a reason it's on the other side of the world.
People
but
forget
right about
Thomas Dewey, yeah.
Well, here's the thing. As long as we're just shooting the breeze now, it is fascinating to see what the most popular sport, even different regions. Mexico doesn't make a lot of sense until you realize in northern Mexico, it's boxing and baseball. Now, that's why Tijuana is only about 11 years old now. That's why Juarez can't keep a team together. It isn't because these are godforsaken wastelands. It's because it's a lot closer to America, just not the big deal. And we have the stereotype that everyone in Mexico is this diehard, and that's true in very specific places. It's not true. It's a very diverse country. And a lot of things make a lot more sense when you see just how different the northern sports culture is from the rest of the country. It's fascinating. And I realize I'm talking like Donald Trump is like I learned this comparatively late in life, so I'm pretending that nobody knew it. But it explained why Tijuana and Juarez are these huge metropolitan areas that have not had a lot of impact on either side of the border. for the sport. And you think it would. I would have thought it would.
Yeah.
Did they ever, everybody knew this but me is what I'm going to end up. I didn't know until I read Powell's book about Love Is Not for Cowards.
Yeah. Well, I think I knew Mexico that before. Yeah. Mexico is just about the only other country in the world where they play soccer with walls, you know, what we call indoor soccer, or actually now arena soccer, and, boy, that's a whole other tangent.
The Monterrey La Raza.
Yeah, and they actually have, I've seen pictures of outdoor courts with walls, so it's fascinating. So I have no idea how to end this. It's been about an hour, so we probably should.
We could do the Michael O'Donohue, and then suddenly everyone was hit by a truck.
I was thinking Michael O'Donohue for the very first sketch that was on Saturday Night Live, which was I would like to feed your fingertips, to the Wolverines, So now that we've made a reference to two dead guys.
O'Donohue.
I think O'Donohue's dead. Okay, I'm going to have to verify.
He's in heaven now. He's so not in heaven. Okay. He's in heaven now, looking down on us with, like, protecting, like, watching over us. He's so not in heaven.
I'm generally a universalist.
Me too!
Which is good because...
You want to have another hour talking about... I'm the world's worst universalist, but still.
No, I just plan... I cannot wait to get up to heaven and meet up with a lot of the people who have said the most ridiculous things about me over the years, including accusing me of being you, and demonstrate to them.
Wow, that gets to you. Know what? Because when people accuse me of being you, I guess it's a compliment, and I haven't really thought about what it's like to be on the other. You and Ken and a bunch of other people get, wow. This has been eye-opening for me. It's been a burden for you guys, hasn't it? I'm sorry.
Because secretly I just want to be funny. So, you know, it is a compliment with people.
Yeah.
Because you're funnier than I am.
Yeah, right.
So to wrap all this up.
Kids on the phone. My kids could fill another hour of why I'm not funny.
So to wrap all this up. I'm going to bring it back to the prospect.
Why not just end it abruptly?
Right. This has been Randy's soccer job. So to bring it all to a close, I'm looking forward to the day, and for you and I, it may not be that far away, where we're up in heaven and we meet up with all the people who have come up with all the conspiracy theories, including the fact that you and I are the same person.
They're not going to heaven either, Bo.
No, I am universalist. We get to spend eternity telling them, I told you so. So, Dan, thank you so much for being on the show.
It was literally, someday I'll...
And this has been Rant...
Thank you so much for listening to the Ranting Soccer Dad podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes or Anchor or Stitcher or whatever you use to get here. Please use it again to subscribe us or like us or rate us. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell anyone who is a soccer parent at any level that we're doing this. I will also be working on the Ranting Soccer Dad guide. There are some parts on the Ranting Soccer Dad site. Please visit rantingsoccerdad.com to get all the latest information about the things I'm doing. And until then, rant on.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.